This conference is being recorded.
This is Luke Allison with CriticalBench.com, and I'm here with Luca Hosovar. Luca, how are you?
Good. Thanks for having me call, Luke. And you got my last name right, too. That's great.
Ah, good. I was worried about that. Important detail, for sure. You're new to the listeners at Critical Bench. Go over a brief introduction. Tell them about your athletic background.
Grew up playing a lot of sports. I'm originally from Slovenia, former Yugoslavia. My first love was basketball. I ended up playing all the way from high school to the college and pro ranks. Played overseas professionally for 4 years, NBA Summer Pro League. But in the meantime, I also fell in love with training. I mean, I've been trying to improve my performance since I was 15, 16, reading performance journals, you name it, just to get better. And it ended up turning into basically my hidden love. And in the meantime, while I was still playing pro basketball, I actually became a strength and conditioning coach and opened one facility with my brother overseas in Slovenia. And now I moved to Seattle because my wife's from Seattle, and opened another facility out of here in a warehouse gym.
Okay, and so you have your own gym, and it's a warehouse gym. Explain what that means to people if they're not sure what that entails.
Warehouse gym's been popping up. Some people will say that, you know, who kind of popularized them was maybe most of the listeners are familiar with Joe DeFranco. But it's basically just a gym within the warehouse, and no fancy equipment that you're going to see in regular health clubs. So, I mean, you come to my place, you're looking at squat racks, half racks, bench, kettlebells, tires, ropes, sleds, prowlers. I don't know if everybody's familiar with that, but there's basically no foo-foo stuff. I mean, everything gets used, everything works. And there's nothing in there that, you know, that's big and clumpy and is going to take up space and not give a lot back, put it that way.
Now, obviously, you've opened two gyms, you've made an investment, you have equipment. Talk a little bit about your motivation to work with athletes and sort of help them with their goals and their dreams.
It's a lot of it, I think, stems from where I came from, just from the fact that I would say I was just about an average athlete, nothing spectacular. And I always just had, you know, just a lot of coaches tell me, hey, you're a hard worker, but I don't know if you can do it. I don't know if you can do it. This restricts you. And it just made me push myself even harder. And I'm motivated to help out, you know, the athletes that do have it in them, that they go and seek out and do whatever to improve themselves. Because I know that from even with an average or below average, you know, genetics, I would say you can not only improve your performance, but you can take, your career to a really high level. And it may be a college scholarship. It may not even be that, but what it'll teach you, you know, from the training and the sport, what it'll teach you in life is a great lesson in itself. So, I'm always willing to give back, and I guess I see myself and a lot of the athletes that I train.
It sounds like the importance of having a smaller gym, you know, a more local gym in each neighborhood, in each large city, is so that the people that need that identify with that, they're the ones diving on the floor for loose balls and things like that they have a place to come because they have people to identify with. Is that right?
I think one of the biggest things is environment. If you hear a lot of top strength coaches talk about it, is programming is definitely critical. But one of the factors not enough people talk about is environment. And you got a small gym and you got 6-8 guys going after it. Everybody's pushing each other, and somebody might come in on a down day and not feel that great. Well, guess what? If you got 6-7 guys to pick you up, they're going to challenge you and you're gonna. I mean, there's no way you're excelling like that training by yourself or training with other athletes that, you know, really don't give a crap. It's just not gonna happen. So it kind of I would say gels together. You got the motivation, you got guys coming in that really want it, and you got this environment that's a no bullshit environment. It's made to nobody's there. There's no mirrors. There's nobody to look at you while you're doing what you're doing. It's all about you.
What ideas or people have influenced your sort of philosophy or style about strength training?
Wow. That's a long list.
But I
think I'll start off with just some of the people that really I took off after, and I guess Eric Cressy was a huge influence and still is kind of my mentor since it's been quite a few years back, but I went to a seminar that he had in London while I was still living in Slovenia. And I made the trip out there and listened to the seminar, just bought all his stuff. And, I mean, just he kind of, I would say, directed me in what I do now. But it's, I would say my strength training is definitely, you know, bits and pieces of all different influences. I learned a lot from Pablo Tsetsouan for kettlebell training. Joe DeFranco was a huge influence. Alan Cosgrove, Mike Boyle. Man, I mean, I could keep naming them. it's just a lot. I really do follow all the best in industry and try to take, you know, try to take as much information and then kind of blend it into my own. Sometimes it's like you can't argue with something that works. But everybody, if I apply it and if it doesn't work, then it really doesn't matter what it says in the book or the journal. What this guy says, if I've been doing it, it doesn't work. It's out the window. But it's been gelled through a lot of different people. But I'll keep the list shorter. So.
Fair enough. That's plenty to chew on, I think, and a good start for sure. How do you balance the need of sort of a wide group of athletes? You know, obviously, as the sports change, the demands change. Or do you prefer to work with athletes from a smaller selection of sports?
It used to be a smaller selection of sports, but it's became, I trained a lot of basketball players, obviously, and then it became, once I came to the States, it was quite a few football players and some really good baseball players. And it's been turning to quite a few MMA guys and wrestlers. And it really just becomes a challenge and interesting to me, you know, to dive into new sports, because I mean, once you understand training, it's a lot easier to go into other sports. But I think that you do have to, I would say dive into it. Like I watch, you know, game footages. If I haven't trained somebody for a sport, I'm going to sit down and watch the game footage, and I'm going to start watching that sport more. I've been going to, you know, tons and tons of MMA fights, amateur. I've started picking back up MMA training. Because I want to know, you know, how it feels like and what the guys are going through, and put myself through it, and it makes me understand it a lot better. So I wouldn't say that I'm limited by anything. I would say that maybe I have maybe a little bit of favoritism towards basketball, football, and MMA, but I definitely don't draw lines there at all.
Okay. I think I can understand that. I can see where you're coming from. That's actually a great segue into my next question. MMA is blowing up around the world. Many people have said it's the fastest growing sport in the world. One of the problems seems to be it's difficult for people to find good quality strength and conditioning information. Explain sort of how difficult it is to actually prepare fighters for MMA and how that preparation differs from other sports.
Yeah, first off, it's definitely tougher, and I think that people tend to just put it in a little box, and it's like, oh, this is MMA training, and it's, you know, you can just go do CrossFit and everything's okay, and it doesn't necessarily work like that. I mean, first you have to understand the demands of an MMA fighter. I mean, they're in the gym doing skill work, mitts, and, you know, grappling, wrestling 6 days a week, five, six, sometimes 7 days a week. And, you know, depending on camp they're in, you might not have an influence over that. So the first thing that you have to do is you have to be, I think it's really important to have a relationship and be in close contact with everybody else that's training that fighter. Because otherwise it becomes just this broken up training where, you know, somebody might be training 3-4 hours a day doing skill work and actual fight training. And then you're going to come to your gym and you're going to be like, okay, today we're going to do this and this and that, and you're just going to end up burning them out. I mean, you're not going to peak their performance. So that's a big factor that I don't think is even mentioned that much. Everybody says, well, this is good for MMA and this is not good for MMA. But really, it depends what camp they're in, what they're looking to. You need to try to get a relationship and work in the best, I would say, the best efforts for what's going to be best for that athlete. And then it also becomes individualization. You know, you can't throw it. You go around, some people have issues with, a lot of MMA guys have issues with, they don't have good relative strength. Some have poor power endurance. Some have poor mobility. And you got to assess that and build the program from there. I think that's the starting point before you even start going into anything else.
Okay. Back in December of 2008, you wrote a blog, and I want to quote quickly from that. You wrote, "What I have found is that the majority of athletes are weak and not powerful at all. So even if they continuously express power, they do not have much anyway, and they will continually express low levels of power." Sort of, yeah. Talk about that for a second.
Well, when you look at mixed martial arts, I mean, the things that you need are power endurance, strength endurance, speed endurance. But if you don't have good amounts of strength, speed, and power, what are you really enduring? It's, you're just going to produce low levels of power. So, yeah, you can go consistently with a certain amount of power the whole fight, but there's not as much power, so it's not really going to phase the opponent. Basically, relative strength, I think, is a big it's kind of like the cup. You know, all the other things, power endurance, strength endurance, speed endurance, they're water in the cup. And once you fill that cup up and you can train all the other aspects, it's just going to overflow. So the only way to get more water in there is you got to make the cup bigger. And the cup is maximum relative strength. So that's the one thing I see. I mean, I go around gyms and I study and I look at training and talk to fighters, and nobody really trains, you know, relative strength. And I don't want to take this to an extreme and say, hey, you need to be powerlifting and deadlifting 600 pounds to do MMA. But, I mean, most guys would, I mean, just doing that would improve their performance so much, it would be incredible. Because, if you have 30-40% more power, more strength than you had, even once you're more tired, you're still going to be producing more power than you did before in the later round. So it just makes perfect sense, but sometimes you got to step back and look at the situation and say, yeah, this is what I need, or maybe even just understanding the, you know, the exercise science of it, so.
Now, you described sort of the upper end of, you know, sort of powerlifting, you know, comparable statistics. What is just absolutely too weak for an MMA fighter? What's someone that just has not put the level of time into their strength and conditioning? Are we talking about weighted chin-ups, you know, bodyweight bench press? What are some numbers for people?
It's hard to say numbers, but, I mean, if, you know, some people will say, well, you got to do this and that. I mean, if you can't squat about 1.5 times your body weight, or, you know, maybe that's not, you know, maybe you don't have a good biomechanics for a squat, and then you might trap bar deadlift. But if you're a 200, I'm just going to round it up because it's easy. If you're a 200-pound fighter and, you know, you can't squat 300 or trap bar deadlift 300, I mean, that's probably a problem. You know, if you're not squatting 500, I don't have an issue with that. But or you can't do 10 bodyweight chin-ups, but you're an MMA fighter. I mean, those are things that you can right off the bat say, hey, you know, your base level of strength is just really, really bad. And I'll get a lot of guys in that, you know, will do very, very, very simple things, and the fighters won't be able to do it. You know, they just won't be able to do it. And I'll ask them what they've been doing, and literally they'll just do, you know, fight specific stuff, and put into circuits, do some calisthenics sprints, and or like go on YouTube and watch some videos and put some circuits together.
Are you comfortable sort of being the person that confronts, you know, someone that wants to fight and say, you know what, you're not strong enough, and chances are you're going to get it put in a position where you could be hurt really, really badly? Are you comfortable with that, or do you think that's, you know, a technique coach or a manager or someone like that, that's their position?
I mean, I think that, you know, I'm gonna state my opinion, regardless or not, because at the end of the day, it's the fighter's best interests that are my best interests. You know, if at the end of the day, if somebody's associated to you and they get smacked, it's not great. But MMA fighters are gonna fight. They're, you know, it's hard to say, hey, don't fight. You gotta get fights under your belt to get better at what you do. I don't think that saying, hey, you know, let's get tons and tons stronger before you can have your first fight is the way to go either. I think that everything can be done as you go along. You know, some people, like I said, it's kind of like swinging the pendulum to the middle. Some people will go to extremes and say, oh, you need to get so much stronger and train so much more. And just wait. But at the same time, I think you can train skill and set up a fight and get stronger and do all that at once. It just takes good programming, a good team, and good communication.
Now, just to sort of completely cover the things that maybe people are doing that they shouldn't be doing, circuit training and barbell complexes with really lightweight seem to be, you know, sort of very, very popular for MMA conditioning, if you check YouTube, if you look around, because they improve muscular endurance. Is that really what people need to be spending their time on? If they're already wrestling, if they're already doing jiu-jitsu and things like that, isn't that sort of the same thing?
I think that barbell complexes are a good thing. The question is, it goes right back to assessing the athlete. Because usually it's just a punch in the dark. It's like, hey, we're doing barbell complexes because this guy's doing barbell complexes. Or because the coach said, let's all do barbell complexes, but not why I need to do them. What are my weak points? Once again, you do barbell complexes and you're using Jaffa cakes to put on the bars. What are you really doing? So why not let's get stronger and then do the barbell complexes with a heavier weight? And, I mean, yes, it's training anaerobic endurance, and I think that those muscles do have to get used to that lactic acid buildup. You know, sometimes sprints won't do that. Sometimes fighting won't do that. And that's why you got to split up training and fighting. But I don't think, like I said, it's kind of like they're not – barbell complexes are actually, I think, a great way to go about doing certain types of strength and conditioning for MMA. But – it goes back to assessing the athlete and saying, hey, what do they need? What's priority? You know, what's going to fall within the program? A lot of times my guys will do the barbell complexes at the end of a speed training workout. And, you know, we'll be doing speed squats, speed bar squats, and we'll go through a lower body speed training workout, and then at the end we'll finish with barbell complexes. So it's not something that I don't use. I think they're great. But once again, I know that a lot of guys use them, and that's all they do.
That was going to be my follow-up because, you know, it seemed that Randy Couture had sort of put his spin onto a barbell complex, which basically looked like something that Jarovic would have come up with, you know, to sort of help much more explosive athletes, you know, Olympic lifters in their development. And then people said, well, that's the Randy Couture routine. And they wouldn't even give credit, and then they would sort of misinterpret the purpose of it. So,
well, I mean,
I don't know.
Basically, the complexes all started with Jarovic, and then everybody puts their name on it once they add an exercise, right?
Yeah, I now the Randy
make
Couture complex. Sure.
Complex named after me, and just throw something in there that's extra. But I mean, as long as they, like I said, you know it. There's so much in the fitness and strength and performance industry. There's so many trends. So somebody does something, and because of the media now, and the big stars. I mean, how many times do you watch TV and here's the BJ Penn workout, you know, and oh my God, the BJ Penn workout, let's all do the BJ Penn workout. But, you know, for most strength coaches, they watch the BJ Penn workout and they hold their head like, what the hell is going on right there? So it's kind of like the same thing. Well, this guy said it's good, let's all do it. And but nobody knows why, you know, so.
Yeah, and I think that that's sort of difficult to get people, you know, to raise their level of awareness and education to be sort of a little bit more discerning. I guess the last thing we'll run through is CrossFit. How applicable is something like CrossFit, which isn't structured, it doesn't have periodization, for fighters if they're just doing something like the workout of the day?
I mean, here's my thing, is that I don't necessarily hate CrossFit. I disagree with some of the things they do. I mean, we'll do circuits that will be similar, you know, you want to call it similar, but, you know, we're not going to do Olympic lifts for a lot of reps, you know, under like, basically like crazy fatigue and be doing clean and jerks and things like that. But we'll do EDT things like escalating density training, or we'll do time circuits and try to beat them, but everything will be controlled to where it doesn't get too crazy. And I think, you know, it's the same thing with CrossFit is it doesn't have, you know, there is no programming to it or progressive overload necessarily. And it just becomes just like I can't remember the exact words that that one person put it, but hey, you know, we make the same workouts for everybody. It's just that, you know, the elite athletes are at a higher level than the 50-year-old man that you know, has a regular job, and that's far from the truth. I mean, you're looking at different sports that are more or less specific, and different athletes that have different needs. There's no way. I mean, you tell me, you ask any top coach whether they'll do the same workout for, you know, five different levels of athlete that have five different needs. It's not going to happen. I mean, I think that there can be some generalizations, but I think that's pushing it too far.
Having covered sort of the things that you're not supposed to do, and briefly touching on maybe what you should do if you're an MMA fighter or you're training MMA fighters, given your choice, given freedom, how would you train an MMA fighter?
Are you saying now, give an example of, I don't know, a training
something
week?
You do? Yeah, I mean, just as specific as you'd like to be.
All right, depends how far a guy's out from the fight, but usually I have them do two full body workouts a week. We might do three and split it up if they're far away and the needs ask for it. But otherwise, we'd go two full body. We do basically, once again, this is all kind of individualized, but we do more to speed. Always start with dynamic mobility, foam rolling. That's extremely, extremely important. These guys are so, so tight. Tons of myofascial restrictions. I mean, you name it, and very, very tight in the hips, very tight in the pec minors, hunched over a lot of time. So really important to get more thoracic mobility. So we'll spend 10 to 15 minutes on that, go through dynamic mobility, a good amount of warm-up, and then from there on we'll go and do speed work or plyos or, like I said, depending on the need for it, and then go to max strength work. And then we'll work on weaknesses and finish off with conditioning if it calls for it. Like I said, it really depends how in tune we are with the camp, and if they're doing tons of conditioning, we'd lay off of that and just work on speed and strength and explosiveness.
And how long, if you had your choice of a camp, would you run? Would you run 10 weeks, 12 weeks, 8 weeks, something like that?
Well, I mean, I preferably would be from the onset. First of all, I don't like you know, fighters going and taking too long of breaks after fights, which a lot of them do, and then start coming back, you know, within whatever amount of time they got. But I think you should constantly train. You should have deload periods. You should have times where you take off. But you know, I like for the fighters to be with me the whole time. And I, that way, first of all, it's a lot easier to control what they're doing. It's a lot easier to program. It's a lot easier to know how tired they are, what they need. So I mean, I've got guys as, you know, as close to as 3 weeks before a fight, which I don't like, and as far out as 12 weeks. You know, I think even 14, 15 weeks. Yeah. So it's really different. It's kind of like if you get a guy 3 weeks before a fight, it's limited how much you're going to be able to work on his strength and speed. So we'll work on basically strength, endurance, power, endurance. Just get him ready that way. But if it's further out, it's a lot easier to plan. You can work on more things, and it's definitely going to be a lot better for him long term.
And the degree to which you can help someone is probably relative to your familiarity with them. So if you have them, you know, sort of several days a week, and then they have a fight several months away, you can really sort of map things out and sort of make a structure for them to fit into.
Yeah, it's a lot easier because – no, go ahead.
No, I finish, please.
No, I was going to say, well, it's, you know, it's a lot easier that way because, too, it's, you know, here's some aspects that, once again, we didn't talk about is the mental aspect, you know, the psychology of it, and a huge one, which is nutrition. And, you know, I can be the first one to tell you that there's so many fighters still going the old, cool, old school, you know, cutting tons and tons of weight. And, you know, that way, the more I have and the more I can ingrain in their brain how important nutrition is, you know, staying within 5 to 7% of your fighting weight. And you can't do that. You can't do that with having 3 to 4 or 5 weeks. You just can't. You know, it's a lot harder. And it's not going to make that much of a difference. But, you know, the longer out you are, the more of a difference it is. And the more these guys can really start, you know, believing in your program and saying, wow, okay, he knows what he's talking about, start seeing results, and then they can be more and more compliant with what you say because they believe in what you're doing.
If you have fighters for a longer duration, you know, maybe for a year, 6 months, whatever, how comfortable are you with sort of being able to work on different attributes or sort of facets of their personality that really sort of feed into their style of fighting, whether they have really good conditioning, whether they're really strong mentally, you know, whether they'd like to pick up people and slam them and sort of, you know, sort of really differentiate themselves from other fighters?
Well, I mean, whether you like it or not, when you spend a lot of time with somebody, you're going to influence their psychology. So, you know, what you talk about with them, you know, what you talk about during the training is really, really going to influence them. I kind of relate everything in the gym to life. And, I mean, I've had a lot of guys that, you know, they came in the gym and, you know, they don't talk much and you know, they train hard, but they just, you know, there's more inside of them than what they're showing. And once they get into that competitive environment, it slowly starts coming out because people have to get to know you. They have to get to know the people that they're around before they get comfortable. But then when it starts coming out, see, now you not only have you increased, I would say, their strength and speed and power, but you've let them loose the extra 20-25% of that mental edge. You know, I always say, like, when my guys train, I tell them, nobody's doing what you're doing. So when you step in the ring, when you look at the guy across from you, you know that he didn't do what you did. He didn't work as hard. There's just no way. So right over there, like, you got the confidence and you got that mental edge. And I just, you know, at the end of the day, that's all it is. Some people, even though they have skills, they don't completely believe in themselves. And sometimes basically the gym is the way to get that out and make them confident about what they can do. You know, they didn't know they can, you know, deadlift 400 pounds, but hey, it's like 2-3 months into it, they're deadlifting 440. And it's like, they look at themselves and like, holy crap, I didn't know I can do that. And that just basically starts a whole wave of things that it's just going to, you know, carry over into whatever sport they're doing. So.
Yeah, it's just the opportunity to sort of improve their capacity for things and, you know, put their trust in other people for sure. I think we've more or less exhausted MMA for now. In terms of your business, maybe personal goals, what's next for you, and what does the rest of 2009 hold?
Right now, I'm spending more and more time in my business. I've been actually flip-flopping between a bigger gym and my own, and I'm just basically cutting down slowly days and hours in another place. So June 1st, I'm opening another athlete training program, which is basically going to be a age 13 to 18 group, mostly high school athletes. I'm going to open up another strength camp, which is I don't want to say kind of boot camp style, but it's just going to be strength training that using implements, strongman implements, crawlers, things like that, and just it people just like that type of training more, especially for the A-type personality. So that's going to come up. I'm definitely trying to do more and more writing, and getting my blog more up to date and putting up a couple more sites. So there's always new opportunities coming up. Also in a month we're opening up a speed camp here in Seattle. It's going to be basically I haven't seen a lot of quality speed camps, and or put it this way, not being promoted enough, and there's so many kids out there that need that type of training. So we're gonna got a couple of partners where we're gonna start running speed camps for different sports, some general, some more specific, and making it, number one, affordable, but number two, really, really quality. So that's the things that are in the near future. There's a whole bunch of other things that are coming up that are a little further away for me to talk about, but definitely a lot of great opportunities.
And if people are interested in getting in touch with you or finding what you've written already, where's the place for them to do that?
They can go either to my blog, which is wholesomeartperformance.com. My gym site is going to be up and running in 2 or 3 weeks. The design's already done. That's wholesomeartperformancegym.com. So just for anybody that doesn't know how to spell my last name, it's HOCEVAR performance.com. Then we're going to have Seattle speed camps. That's going to be up in about a month too. But you can contact me at luca@wholesomeartperformance.com. If you got any questions about things that we were talking about today or any opportunities, let me know.
Well, I think that about does it. We seem to be out of time, but Luca, I definitely appreciate the detail and the willingness to share. It's very helpful. Thank you.
Thanks for having your call, Luke.
All right. Take care.
Take care.